Hello, and welcome to another episode of DC Crisis Adventures. I'm your host, James Santana. As always, I'll be rating, reviewing, and breaking down each DC Crisis event as they happen in chronological order. Today, we'll be breaking down Crisis on Infinite Earths. Before we jump into that, I have a little bit of housekeeping. With the first episode, I didn't talk about kind of why the books that I chose made the list. If you look up a lot of DC Crisis books on the internet, they'll include things like Heroes in Crisis, Identity Crisis, which I don't feel are crisis events in what is supposed to be a real crisis event. But I do look at it as they're cool kind of DC crossovers that have happened all the time, and it's a cool name that sells a book. But I do think it's kind of out of place for this show to cover things like Heroes in Crisis, Identity Crisis, some of the extra small books that they call Crisis. That's only because they don't fit the criteria. So, that being said, the criteria for the show is the books that are chosen, one, have to be considered a Crisis-level event, meaning it's a crossover with multiple heroes from multiple books that are on a massive scale, instead of just a small like villain or mystery. That excludes things like Heroes in Crisis and Identity Crisis, for example. Over that, it doesn't have to have the word Crisis in the title. We don't see when we come to Zero Hour, even though Zero Hour's full title is Crisis in Time, or Flashpoint, or Multiversity. Convergence don't have those, the word Crisis in the title. But the criteria is it had to have a big multi-hero crossover. Two, has to deal with some type of idea that blends into the multiverse, whether it's them coming from an alternate reality, or an alternate Earth, or bleeding into an alternate Earth like in Milk Wars, or as you saw in Flash in the pilot episode with Flash Two Worlds and crossover multiple Earths. There are multiple heroes from multiple Earths involved in it. Oh, and finally, it has to retcon something from DC's history, whether it's adding something new or taking away something from the past, which we'll talk about a lot more when we get into this episode fully. So with that in mind and the criteria laid out in this episode, we are going to go forward with Crisis on Infinite Earths. So guys, originally created in 1984. Launched in 1984, we have Crisis on the Infinite Earths written by Marv Wolfman and art by George Perez. We'll be starting the episode off always with some real-world background before we get into the minutia of the book. I will be referencing things from a book called Crisis on Infinite Earths, Behind the Crisis, which came in the Crisis on Infinite Earths box set. So, and I will be using that copy of Crisis on Infinite Earths also for this episode. I will have them in the show notes below, so you guys can check those out. So, Crisis on Infinite Earths is the tantamount crossover story forever. It's kind of the reference of what we think of as superhero crossover events. It's kind of where it really does start in the sense of storytelling. In 1986, we did have Secret Wars from Marvel Comics. With Marvel Comics doing Secret Wars, it kind of, that wasn't created in the same vein as Crisis on Infinite Earths. It's a crossover with a lot of heroes, you know, doing crazy, weird, wacky stuff. But at the end of the day, it was solely created to make, to sell toys at the time. I will be maybe covering that in another thing later on with Hunter. We'll see kind of how everything goes with this series. But with that out of the way, there's a lot of comparisons to Secret Wars and Crisis on Infinite Earths. Later on, Crisis on Infinite Earths has become such a kind of like big thing in the zeitgeist for comic book fans that it does set up the idea of what's a crisis. And the word crisis is like, all right, cool, it's a big mega crossover and something earth-shattering is going to happen and a hero is going to die. Normally, at least in the DC terms, it becomes a running joke that a Flash has to die every crisis. With that, we get to see kind of how it has permeated throughout the landscape of comic books, where other comics have referenced things like in Black Hammer, the opening of their book is they'll call it a crisis event, but something similar. You have it in John Hickman's Secret Wars, which is just a direct homage. It's a mix between Crisis on Infinite Earths and Secret Wars. And you mush it together, you get John Hickman's Secret Wars of 2016. You have other books like Commanders in Crisis, Which is written by Steve Orlando, which is about crisis events. You have the new Outsiders book written by the hive mind of Jackson and Lansing coming out next year or this year. Oh no, it's coming out of 2023, which deals with the fallout from crisis and how history's changed. And as a crisis comic book historian, I love all this stuff. It has a massive, massive impact across comic books as a whole. I think it's one of the best things that ever happened. It sets up what it means to be a crisis. I know I'm talking about, like, it's almost like I'm doing the review already, but I'm not. That's just kind of how it has permeated throughout other comics. I didn't want to drag on too long later on talking about what it means and blah blah and Tom Clancy. So I'd rather get that out first because we are in 2023 and Crisis came out in the 80s. So we kind of have seen how Crisis on Infinite Earths has affected everyone across the board as a comic book story. I think, you know what, I'll think I'll just segue right into some of the real world stuff. So Marv Wolfman created Crisis on Infinite Earths not just as a, oh, let's recon DC's history and do all this fun stuff, or I have a cool idea. For years, he toyed with the idea of a character called the Librarian. The Librarian, the character that created that would be, which will eventually become the Monitor. In the book, but the librarian was supposed to be this character that was watching superheroes for years and chronicling them, and eventually it comes to a head where he has to fight all the superheroes in the world. So with that idea was pitched between Marvel and DC for years, while Marvel from in working at both companies, which is cool. I found that out on a video on YouTube and some of the behind it. Of course, they don't talk about the Marvel stuff in this book, but I found that out on a YouTube short, actually talking about Infinite Crisis on Infinite Earths a couple weeks ago. I forgot the channel, so I will give credit where credit's due when I'm uploading it in the show notes. It's really cool, though, that you have this huge story, and as a comic writer myself, that kind of passion and idea that stays with you forever, and Marvel never let it go. They were going on to celebrate the anniversary of DC Comics at the time, which I think was their 50-year anniversary. I'm not 100% sure. I'm probably very, very, very wrong with this. But with that, you have the cool idea that they went to Wolfman and they asked him, hey, you know that story you've been pitching with this librarian guy? How about we do that story? With the final go-ahead, he reached out to his longtime partner, the great artist George Perez, who sadly passed away earlier this year. George Perez was working with him on Teen Titans or slash Tales of the Teen Titans at the time. So that was actually the natural starting off place where you first meet who would be the Monitor. With the two of them, they set out this course of what would be this massive, massive crossover. With this book I do have, which is really cool, is that with the behind the scenes stuff, it has a lot of information. It goes very in detail, which I won't break down every single thing, but it was cool to see like the layout of what they wanted Crisis to really be originally. So Crisis on Infinite Earths was listed as like, oh well, we're gonna clean up DC history, which is cool, but also we're gonna remove certain books and certain ideas that we've had in the past. So certain books the Monitor had to appear in. I'll go through the list. Some of them, of course, is all your basic DC books, which would have been all preludes for the comic book before Crisis on Infinite Earths happened. Also, what's really cool about this book, it does contain all those stories. So the ones that don't include the Monitor were Atari Force, Spanner's Galaxy, which is referenced currently in Mark Waid's World's Finest Teen Titans, Jem, Son of Saturn, Sun Devils, Sergeant Rock, Arian, Arok, Omega Man, Joni Thunder, Thriller, Star Trek, Superpowers, DC Challenge, and New Talent Showcase. Which is really weird because a lot of these, like, I understand, like, Star Trek and, like, these Superpowers and DC Challengers, which, like, one was a licensed property, the other two were kind of homages to Super Friends that were going on TV at the time. And New Talent Showcase was an anthology. But things like Sergeant Rock, and Sergeant Rock makes sense because there's a past set in the past. But also, like, Jem, Son of Saturn kind of doesn't and should be in there. But whatever, it was cool to see that, like, Memendium in it. It's really cool to see all these insider letters. There is also a cool kind of editorial page from Dick Giordano to the editorial staff going, quote, "The need to include the Monitor in your plans is not optional, but absolutely required for all designated titles. If you have any questions, please bring them with the editorial meeting on Friday, January 20th. Thanks. Yeah. It was a cool to see, like, the behind the scenes where they kind of were like, no, this is no longer an option. We are going to go forward with this story. So the monitor appearances start in those sets of stories, which they do have in this book. So there is also kind of a kill list. I won't go through the kill list. They all happen kind of in the book because everyone kind of dies anyway. But there's tons of letters about why and how and what was used in the creation. The major reason why they did create Press on Air for Nerds, besides celebrating DC's anniversary as a company, Marv Wolfman and the editors at the time, new editor Bob Greenberg, along with Dick Giordano, sat down with Marv and talked about kind of what has been going on in DC for years. And the fact that I talked about this in Crisis on Multiple Earths / Flash of Two Worlds, issue 123, episode 1 for this podcast, is that DC's continuity was super messy. You had things like, well, you had titles like All-Star Squadron running around, but they were all the Earth 2 guys. You had Justice Society, but then you had things like Justice League of America. You had multiple characters of the same name that looked the same, like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, even though, yes, they're slightly different. And then you had things that you had just acquired, things like Shazam from Wiz Comics, the Charlton characters of Peacemaker and Blue Beetle, The Shade, Ozzy, Peter Thunderbolt, and so on, all Charlton guys, along with brand new characters, and merging them all kind of together would make more sense. But how do you go about it? The idea was to create taking the idea of the librarian, not just of this chronicler that is just like watching the DC universe grow and work and operate, which he does do as the monitor, but taking it and just taking it a step further by going, no, at creation, the birth of the universe, there's a reason why stuff has gone wrong, and it pulls from a string from Green Lantern, which is Corona watching the Big Bang happen causes the multiverse to be born. And from there, the monitor then looks out upon society and sees kind of what this is. But then at the same instant, his evil double is born in the antimatter universe, who wants to take over and has been fighting him for years behind the scenes. Which is really cool that the fact that Crisis on Infinite Earth doesn't open up that the monitor is recruiting heroes because he's just starting the war with the anti-monitor. It's the fact that he's losing the war with the anti-monitor and has now had to come out and ask and pull for help. You have the character of the Harbinger, which, in long story short, is mixed up, and she gets kind of messy as years have gone on, which I will talk about in other versions of the story as we go on through Crisis on Infinite Earths and this Crisis Adventures series. But really, one of the big things about Layla as the Harbinger, that once she's the adopted daughter of the Monitor, some versions she's down at Troy, some versions she's Dark Angel, some versions she is just an Amazon that they found. It's complicated later on, but right now Layla Miller and the Monitor are out to recruit heroes and villains. One of the first things that you notice if you read some of the backup stuff about what was happening in the comic in the little tie-in comics beforehand, which was the Monitor seems to be like a tech kind of like runner for villains. This is more of just so you can interact with the heroes and see how they operate, along with recruiting some of the villains. It's really cool to see all that in the real world aspect, that this mystery was brewing in the back of multiple books. Later on, DC would try to do this with Pandora in New 52. I kind of may or may not touch upon Pandora when we talk about Flashpoint. When we get to that episode, we'll talk a little bit more about that. With that said, we'll jump right into Crisis on Infinite Earth. Besides, like, I didn't want to go so in-depth with the behind-the-scenes stuff. The behind-the-scenes stuff is great. There is really cool, what's great about this book behind the crisis is that there is a lot of letters, in-office letters, between editors and writers kind of trying to iron out some issues and kind of what their ideas were back and forth. But I really do like the very first letter they show in the book, which is, guys, this is not optional. We are changing the DC landscape going forward. And it's great. So well, from there we'll jump right into Crisis on Infinite Earth. Like I said, I will be breaking down the event as it happens. So let's go. We're jumping right into Crisis on Infinite Earth. This is a 12-issue series. Like I said, it ran in from 1984 to 1985. Really, it was the end of 84, really 85 to 86. So one of the major things that, like I said, at this, like, it does open up with the history of how the world is born. It's a scene that's been played out countless times through other DC Crisis books, which is the one spark, the explosion of the multiverse, and it opens up with the first character, the first new character introduced to is Pariah. Pariah is a doctor. He blames himself. He says, like, "Oh, I caused all this." So you're led to believe immediately that he is the reason why this Earth, this random Earth that we are shown, is being destroyed as he's randomly teleported away. Next up, we then see Earth 3 in peril, falling to the same issues that we saw in the first part of the issue. The world turning white and falling apart. We also, if you haven't weren't reading books at the time, you don't know who the Earth 3 guys are, don't worry, they're evil doppelgangers of the, at time, the current just, you also meet the hero known as, I mean, he just called Alexander Luther. He is the good version of Lex. And he, along wife Lois Lane, put their child into a rocket and fired him off into space, where Pariah and Ultraman and Power Ring run into Pariah, and notice that he just fades as the world is destroyed. The shuttle for the Ifrit baby is then taken and teleported to a satellite station, which is just kind of floating outside of what we call Earth One. In the book, it's referenced as Earth One. We will later on refer to it as Earth Prime, Earth Zero. It's just changed over language over time, but it lands on Earth One. We then get to see the inside this big station, which is the second character you're introduced to is Layla Miller, also known as the Harbinger, who has the ability to energize herself and to teleport through the multiverse as is. When she transforms into Harbinger, she has started to go through the multiverse and gather characters. This is where you get to see a lot of the spin-off books start happening. They pretty much start off from the point where they are the characters that they are trying. Layla and the Monitor are recruiting, start splitting off. In fact, I'm reading the All-Star Squadron tie-in right now, and you see where she takes Firebrand. It's almost like a copy and paste page from there. We go on and to see this whole list of people that she brings to the station, which includes Dr. Polaris, Aaron, a ancient Atlantean sorcerer, Firestorm, sorry, and Killer Frost, John Stewart, Green Lantern, Firebrand from All-Star Squadron, Earth 2, Superman and Obsidian, Prism, Geo Force, Cyborg, Solivar, Blue Beetle, Dawnstar from the Legion of Superheroes. This is Blue Beetle from Earth 4. This is before they merged all the Earths together. Yeah, that's the team right now. Oh, and Psycho Pirate. Psycho Pirate becomes kind of a mainstay in all of the Crisis events going forward. It's really cool to see this as the first quote-unquote team of the multiverse, along with Harbinger herself as kind of a liaison. They next fight Shadow Demons. Shadow Demons are constructs created by the Anti-Monitor. With that, they are made of antimatter energy, so when they fight them, they are kind of hard to beat. You then meet the Monitor for the first time. Going back to the notes from before, the Monitor, like I said, was always supposed to be this librarian character, but with that, you have this cool kind of like alien looking. Almost like he's human, but he looks so unhuman, like this this bigger presence than self character, which is really cool to see when you have someone like that first show up and tie gather's team. So the way the Crisis book continues on, that was the end of issue one. Issue two opens up with the team lineup from the Monitor that the Monitor assembled with Layla as they explain kind of like what's going on in the multiverse. Also, you start seeing worlds kind of bleed together from Anthro, the first hero, and then all of a sudden into Legion of Superheroes. all like prehistoric meeting future Metropolis. There is one major scene that happens in issue two that they get near the opening, which is the arrival of Flash, but not just Barry Allen, but like a decaying, decrepit Barry Allen falling apart and dying in front of Batman's eyes. We then continue jump cut through the story as we see what they call monitor towers. We know them as monitor towers now. They are tuning forks for the multiverse. We see that Pariah has arrived on Earth 1, and that is always a sign of a great disaster about to happen. We see the monitors team has broken off into like different factions to go after these monitor towers. You have Superman and Solovar and Dawnstar going to command these Earth, or Earth AD, or Earth 51 as we now know it, to team up with him to watch and take care of and protect this monitor tower from shadow demons. You have Psycho Pirate, Obsidian, and Aaron in Atlantis. While that's happening, you have Layla kind of coordinating all this, like I said, as the liaison for the monitor. But she does say certain things that are kind of weird in this early stage, where she explains things like, oh, hey, I'm going to betray him soon. And you don't kind of know. You think that maybe she and Pariah work together while Pariah is appearing at these other monitor towers. She eventually leaves the room as she watches all of them, because she can be at multiple places at once. She finds the baby, quote-unquote, Alexander Luthor, now a child. Little, like I said, like, when I say child, I mean, like, he's probably, like, 6 or 7 now, super age stuff. Now we find out that that was the, kind of, towards the end of issue 2. In which now we find out that something's definitely going on with Layla, where she has been talking to someone off in the distance, and now she feels like, oh, well, time has come. You're going to definitely betray her. We now get to issue 3 as Alexander has continued to age up, and you have Brainiac in space kind of monitoring what's going on. The opposite of what you would think a big villain like Brainiac monitoring this event. Be like, oh, well, he's a bad guy. He's not a bad guy in this situation. He's more of, this is a robotic Brainiac, where he is just a collector. If they didn't make the monitor the big guy, bad guy, I could obviously see the Brainiac being, this version of Brainiac specifically, being a bad guy. Again, the teams are continuing to fight and watch the antennas across the multiverse, but it doesn't seem to be working as they continue to be attacked by shadow demons, and the antimatter wave is finally taking out different Earths and different times. We then cut to finally the end of issue 4, and it's Layla killing the monitor. She at one point was possessed by a shadow demon earlier on in the story, and that shadow demon works for the big bad. Pariah is also brought along to the monitor ship just as a, oh hey, like, he belongs here. We cut to what will be Earth 50, or... back then was Earth 50 has changed. I will go over the list later on when we cover Multiversity. What's cool about this, you meet Lady Quark from this planet called War World. It's Wonder World. Sorry, Wonder World. They are pinnacle superheroes type characters. Pariah arrives there, and before the world's gone, he grabs her. It's the first person he's been able to save. With that, he then teleports to the monitor. This issue opens up a little bit before the ending of issue 4. Where you see the birth of a new character, the female Dr. Light, Dr. Hoshi, while Harbinger's finally taken over and embraced her dark side. You have Psycho Pirate, who has already betrayed the team, working for the bad guy, has stolen Red Tornado, and we are now in a completely different ballgame as the monitor knowing he's going to die, and with Harbinger completely betraying them, they know what's about to happen, and the monitor dying and Pariah being there, they know it's all over. This is the first time the complete series of Crisis on Earth takes a big turn. Not only did you think the death of the monitor was a big part, this is the kind of iconic scene at the end of issue 5 where the worlds are all destroyed. The pages all go white, and then they all go black. So So it's crazy. You find out, and I won't break down the rest of the series. Not that I won't break down, but we're jumping through the series a lot. The next issue is now a grown Alexander with a gathering of heroes that he was able to pull from the dying worlds. And on this kind of, I want to say like a very similar to Battle World, it's the one remaining Earth left, but kind of piecemealed with all of the characters, all the Earths that have kind of survived. This is now Alexander being in charge with Pariah at his side, and kind of Harbinger, even though she has this major guilt about why everything's happening. With that, we continue to jump around. The heroes of all the Earths have to kind of save their one Earth from it kind of falling apart because it's not stable. Worlds are bleeding in and out of time and phase shifting, and it's not great. We then meet what we call is called the Monitor. This is the Anti-Monitor before he's given the name the Anti-Monitor. He's revealed to be the big bad guy. The Flash was kidnapped by him and Psycho Pirate. The Monitor satellite has been attacked, and now it's revealed that he is the bad guy. These five Earths that are left, which fortunately include Earth-X, which is now destroyed at the end of issue 6. We have to jump through hoops now, because now we have three Earths left, and it's almost all over there. So this is a very dire story, and this is kind of why it stands up in time. You watch the heroes fall and live, and as I continue to break down the story, a lot of the story continues to be the fight. Our heroes versus the Anti-Monitor, and he continues to win through a lot of the series. I will stop with the full, like, almost, like, walkthrough. I kind of want to get you, like, halfway, so you kind of understand. But like I said, this is a 12-issue maxi series. But there's a big part of the book that I want to touch on, which is the first fight that they bring to the Anti-Monitor himself. After which the satellite has been destroyed, you get to see Alexander with a second team of multiversal heroes that he assembled himself, which is Pariah, Harbinger, of course, pulling everyone around, Blue Beetle, Ted Kord, Earth 4, Earth 2, Superman, Earth 5, Shazam, Earth X, Earth 10, Uncle Sam, Earth 1, Superman, and Lady Kord. They find out the history of the multiverse through Alexander and Pariah, and the birth of what and who the Monitor really is. Which is really cool. This entire issue really is a kind of lesson in what the multiverse is. The lineup then starts to be added to, which includes some Legion members, Mon-El, you have Captain Atom from Earth 4, you have Jade, Green Lantern, The Ray, you have Dr. Light, the new Dr. Light, Martian Manhunter, Wonder Woman, and Supergirl. Wonder Woman from Earth 1, sorry, and Supergirl from Earth 1, and Alan Scott, Green Lantern from Earth 2. Pretty much a lot of their bigger, heavier hitters, and their light-based power guys. And they bring the fight right to the fortress of the Anti-Monitor. Here's the fight and the death I will kind of say is the biggest one that needs help. So, with that, there is always been contention about when crisis happens, a Flash has to die, and Flash being the big hero of Crisis on Infinite Earths and all this other stuff. I honestly don't believe that. With this book, you get to see that Supergirl, Kara Zor-El, is the actual hero. It's the fight we really don't talk about a lot when it comes to this book. It's also the fight that's kind of like, this is the fight that spurs the rest of the series going forward. She's the only one to fight the Monitor head on, besides her cousin, Kal-El, Earth 1 Kal-El. It's the fight that brings the Monitor down for a little bit. It's the one that kind of, like, weakens him enough. It's the sacrifice that she makes. She outright says it in the book that she knows, to quote Supergirl in this, "I can't, but it's okay, I knew what I was doing." And then Clark says, "I wanted you to be safe. You mean so much to me, so much to the world. You succeeded in destroying the machines. Thank heaven. The world may have a chance to live. You're crying. Please don't. You taught me to be brave, and I was. I love you so much for who you are, for what you are, and how good you are." And I remember reading this scene for this reread for this podcast and for my summer stuff, that not only does I for that I forgot that this fight existed, but also for the fact like, that how powerful that scene was. It's the I know we've all seen the cover of Superman holding Supergirl, and that's the iconic scene. But it's not the iconic death that we all talk about. We talk about Barry Allen dying, and that's kind of like a big thing. And then like in Infinite Crisis, Flash dies, and I think I have to double check. I don't definitely Boy dies. In Flashpoint, no, Final Crisis, Flash returns. It's the return of Barry Allen. In Zero Hour, Wally West dies, and it's become like, oh, well, Flash is the big character. He's not. He's the first death we see in the book happen because he is time traveling and all that stuff is happening in the background. But it's the death of Supergirl that kind of proliferates the series. It's the first real hero death that's not done by just the white wave of light that has enveloped the multiverse of antimatter energy. It's the first actual casualty that is shown that's in the fight against the antimatter. I say that without talking about the death of Solovar earlier on, but he was killed by Shadow Demon. So, not to undercut that death, it's just not as big of an impact. It's Solovar that died, and you're like, okay, yeah, someone's gonna die, clearly. It's a death by him, from Shadow Demons, and yeah, he dies short. But then watching Supergirl fight and defeat the Anti-Monitor, not only did that raise, like, oh my god, the heroes can, oh my god, they beat the Anti-Monitor, but at the cost of Supergirl, it's like, well, we can finally beat them, and we won, we're fine, and but we had to do it at the price of Supergirl. I know it's like a little tangenty, but I do like that death a lot. It's a death that also then continues later on post-Crisis. So we continue on with our Crisis breakdown where the five remaining Earths now, they were down to three and now it's back to five. It's a weird count of how they do this, have merged together to become one. You find out the Monitor isn't dead. He then takes on, sorry, the Anti-Monitor isn't dead. He takes on the armor that we now know of, the blue and gold armor, because he was just kind of in his antimatter form after he was killed, defeated by Supergirl. Up in space, while this is all going on, you have a bunch of heroes, space heroes, kind of like trying to survive the collapsing of time and space around them. You find out that Flash is being tortured by Psycho Pirate, only solely because of his vibrational frequency to be able to break the barrier between the matter and antimatter universes. Of course, Barry breaks free, and this is where we get the second big death of Crisis. It's kind of really crazy that these are back-to-back issues, but then you do see kind of his death isn't the reason why he downplays his death a little bit in this kind of Crisis breakdown is that he dies not because he's trying to save everyone in a big fight against the Monitor. He's trying to escape to warn everyone about the Monitor. The problem is that it's not like it's bad. It's kind of more of he does it to save everyone, and he just like kind of succeeds by trying to warn, but he doesn't. Like he's able to stop the Monitor what he's doing at the present time, but he can't go back and warn everyone. He can't warn everyone currently or get to anyone. So this is the scene where you see him back in the beginning of the event, where you see kind of his decaying body, but it's really because he's running so fast, he's going back through time. This is also the iconic scene where you see the multiple pictures of Flash as he breaks down into kind of nothing. But because of that, he has destroyed kind of the new satellite that was being built by the Anti-Monitor. And he has cursed the Flashes since then. What's happening in the background is that the universe is kind of being held together secretly by the Spectre, which is cool. It's the first time you see Spectre on this god tier level of characters. Before this, Jim Corgan was just kind of like a pulp supernatural superhero on Justice Society on Earth 2. But the Spectre himself is a god spirit avenger. Think Ghost Rider for Marvel, if you don't know. He has been holding the universe together since Crisis has started, kind of like putting together why the Earths haven't fallen apart yet. And he kind of is trying to keep him in tandem. While that's happening, you have Guy Gardner reintroducing the next issue as Green Lantern again, because it's not Green Lantern currently, John Stewart is, and with the destruction of Ower happening. With that, you have Brainiac, and this is the first time we get to see all the supervillains gathered for the first time under Brainiac and Lex. Clearly, this is going wrong, but the supervillains have finally joined forces because of what's going on in the background as all the heroes are gathering, the world is dying, and they're kind of trying to figure out how to survive on Earth. We are now on this kind of weird landscape. So these five Earths are kind of merged at certain points. I think sometimes they're pictured as a ring, as a circle of Earths connected by like little points. Sometimes they're in a straight line. The maps don't always line up, but they're just at different points. So Earth 2, Earth X, Earth 5, Earth 1, and Earth 4 are all tied together. Now you have this kind of red sky moment. It's the big scene where the Earths are being invaded now by the supervillains. The supervillains are now the chance to take over every Earth. These are the main Earths of the multiverse. We're going to take over these Earths, which is kind of a weird backdrop story that's happening. While you have Layla, Alex, Pariah at the UN kind of explaining to the Earth, at least Earth 1, what's going on. With the Anti-Monitor defeated, they kind of think, well, they believe the Anti-Monitor defeated. They have this idea that they're going to try to restore their universes. The problem with that is Pariah disappears, and the fact that Pariah disappears means that the fight's not over, and the wars continue on, but now with supervillains at the helm. They control three of the five Earths. Now, this is kind of the gathering of superheroes trying to build a cosmic treadmill, and we now bring the fight as heroes and supervillains clash. This is a very classic supervillain. It goes from this universal master like behind everything to classic supervillains versus superheroes. It's a war between superheroes and supervillains happening. Also, this is the first time we see some villains actually kill superheroes on screen. It's actually really wild to see. You can see the poisoning of Tula and everything. Also, you see the death of Brainiac as you find out that Lex and Brainiac were planning to betray everyone. We get into the next issue, and with that, you have two stories. Two stories. One is called the Monitor Team. They're on the bottom of every page going forward, which is just a history of the DC Universe. It's the monitor telling Layla through tapes he left her the complete history of the DC Universe from start to finish. While on the main page, you have the heroes continuing to fight villains. This is also the first time you get to meet Superboy Prime. You find out that the monitor is still alive, the Anti-Monitor is still alive, and that Spectre can't keep this up forever. So you have another quote-unquote final standoff at the edge of limbo and time and space, this big white room where the Big Bang is about to happen, where the monitor is going to recreate the universe at the beginning of time. It's a big, massive gathering of superheroes and villains. And that's kind of it. It really it doesn't end there. The heroes are able to stop the Anti-Monitor along with the Spectre from recreating the universe as is. But with that, everything goes white again, and Earth is bound into one Earth again. Problem with that is the series isn't over. That world is one Earth, but all the heroes are blended in that don't exist, or some people don't exist. Like Earth 2 Clark is there, but Lois isn't there. You find out that the Anti-Monitor has the final issues. We bring it to the final issues of the story. The heroes have gathered to finish off the Anti-Monitor because they realize there's only one Earth left, and only one Earth can truly exist now. With the help of Brainiac and some of the space heroes, Layla gathers Dr. Light and a few other heroes to figure out how to beat the Anti-Monitor. While you have the magic of the DC Universe gathering and beating shadow demons, you have an all-out war against the Anti-Monitor. The Anti-Monitor is only solely defeated by a combination of powers that are Layla kind of leading everyone with all their like light-based powers, Dr. Light herself, which is what she was created as a weapon against the Anti-Monitor, and Alexander Luthor, the only person that's able to control both matter and antimatter. When this final armor is destroyed, you see characters like Wonder Woman die, which is really weird because she does die and she kind of just like disappears because she's killed by the Anti-Monitor. It explains later on. And she's Earth 2 Wonder Woman, not Earth. You have them defeat the Anti-Monitor. All the people that are on Earth now have kind of blended into this new Earth and reconstructed. But left on this pillar, you have Superboy Prime. It's Superboy, but from Earth Prime, our Earth. You have Earth 2 Superman. You have Alex from Earth 3. They have sent everyone else through a gate back to Earth, but they didn't have enough time to save everyone. That was the death of Wonder Woman. And Alex kind of had to stay behind to close the gate. But Superman stayed behind to help him, and so did Superboy Prime. And they finally beat this big, massive cloud called the Anti-Monitor and defeat him finally. Now that the three of them are stranded in this, like, little broken part of the Anti-Matter universe, they then kind of just chill and talk. Alex reveals that he has saved Lois and how their universe would be reborn. Quote from Alexander Luthor: "I knew how the universe would be reborn. I knew the consequences. I cannot let you of all heroes suffer that loss." He's talking to Superman of Earth 2, the first Superman, the Superman from Action Comics number 1, talking about how it wouldn't be fair for him of all the heroes to lose something so major and so big to his life and everything because of this event. Like, how could he, the first of us, the best of us, suffer so much and sacrifice so much for so many and not finally be rewarded at the end of his world? It's so they end up stepping through this weird pocket reality. It's later revealed that Infinite Crisis is what this is, and I'll get to that when we talk about Infinite Crisis later on in the show. But he opens this weird kind of tunnel. He calls it a tunnel. Quote from Alexander Luthor: "I can't take you back to Earth, but I am a tunnel into that other place. Come into me, we will all go there." The other place is, at least on this reading, it's assumed that this is heaven. This other place, this magic, peaceful place where Lois was kind of stashed. Later on, we'll find out in Infinite Crisis what it really is. But that being said, it's kind of a weird spot to be in. He's just kind of this omniversal tunnel that exists. So he, Alex himself, Superman of Earth 2, Lois Lane of Earth 2, and Superboy Prime all step into this thing and they disappear. You find out, it kind of then does three kind of epilogues at this point. One being part one, quote, "The apparent death of Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman Earth 2 was killed by the Anti-Monitor. She was shot," which is, this is a weird epilogue, to be honest. Earth 2's Wonder Woman was vaporized by the Anti-Monitor as they were trying to flee back into the gate. But really what happened was, instead of her being killed, she was just de-aged from woman to, quote, "from woman to girl to infant to her original state of creation," which is a ball of clay. It lands on Paradise Island. The clay falls back there. Her spirit, though, goes to Olympus, where she is reunited with her husband, Steve Trevor, and they are created as gods, which is cool. They are heralded now as gods. Really weird, not crazy. It's also considered part one, and the part two is Mount Olympus as the epilogue, which is Wonder Woman of Earth 2 becoming a god. Epilogue three, called the Deaths. The fact that the bodies of certain characters were never found, they still created grave sites and grave services for them. So, with the going back before, with the death of Supergirl, there's a big ceremony about Supergirl dying. Once they defeated the Anti-Monitor for the first time, and the five remaining Earths merged together for a little bit as this is the five different pieces, everyone started forgetting who Supergirl was. Like, she never existed. And that was a problem. After they all merged to one Earth, like, Supergirl never existed. They knew a hero died in the battle, in a great battle, but they didn't know who. Which was kind of weird, but it was the kind of preemptive strike about what you were to see happening throughout the book, that people, as Earths merged, there could only be one Earth left at the end of this. But yeah, so there are some people that they remember, like Dolphin and Tula dying, but then you have characters like Power Girl being on Earth, even though she's from Earth 2. You also have what's called the Rebirths, which is Wally West take up the mantle of the Flash. So for a lot of people, I tell people this, that Crisis on Infinite Earths, why Wally West plays a bigger role later on, because this finished in 86. I wasn't even born. I was born in 88. So for my entirety of my childhood into my adulthood, Wally West has been my Flash, and this is the event that causes it. And then they talk about what's going to happen in the future. They rewrite that Commandy becomes Tommy Tomorrow. They talk about Jonah Hex going to the future, the rebirth of Oa. But they kind of leave this weird, not epilogue theme or like cliffhanger, but this idea that Lady Quark, Pariah, and Harbinger will be a big thing going forward as they will take up the mantle of what the Monitor was doing for the universe. And then the final page has the Psycho Pirate in Arkham. He's the only character to truly remember everything that has happened from start to finish. And this is that becomes what is his running character arc forever. That he's become unhinged because of not only the Medusa helmet, the Medusa mask, but also for the fact that he remembers everything. He's the only character to remember the entirety of Crisis, besides Layla, Lady Quark, and Pariah, who have not gone mad. It's so that's the entirety of Crisis on Infinite Earths as a breakdown. Like I said, I was reading some parts and breaking down the earlier parts and jumping through the history. The book is fantastic. I'll jump into my review. I kind of talk about this on my social media a lot and why I love this book. It's one of my favorite stories of all time. It's beautifully drawn. It's massively written, masterfully written. And what makes this a crisis book, it is. So, sorry, before I get into my review and finishing my random review, what classifies this as a crisis, besides it being the first? And the retcon, and why I didn't talk about this in episode one, is that this is the retcon. This is what cleans up, I think at that point, 40 or 50 years of DC history, and cleans it all, 50 years of DC history, and cleans it all up. It merges all the Earths into one Earth, all the characters into one. It fixes, like, weird continuity errors, and kind of makes it, here's everything you need to read, it's all happening here. Yeah, so that's why it's a crisis book. So back to my review. This book is amazing. I have read this book a million times. I owned at one point 3 copies of the book. I think I'm down to 2. My original copy that I bought, I still have. And then my wife got me. I have it in singles, just because I have like facsimiles and stuff, and just like beat up copies, and which I've lost over time. And then my third copy is my favorite copy, and the copy I used for this episode, which is the Crisis on Infinite Earths box set copy. I love this. This is phenomenal. Yes, Superman of Earth 2 really is the main character. But it does do something to a DC reader emotionally. There is an emotion to this that's not seen in other books, I think, or they've tried it before. I mean, there are other books that hit you in an emotional spot that you're like, oh man, this is really great or really wild. But the fact that pretty much the heroes are losing more than half of this book is insane to me. The fact that there is major deaths, like again, the death of Supergirl is massive. It's truly massive. It's not like, oh, I'm a Supergirl fan, I think that's why. It's not. It's the fact that Supergirl was a major character in comics at the time, and the fact that you kill off, and not that you just kill her off, that she vibrates and she dies, or she's like absorbed by a shadow demon. It's the fact that she's pretty much beat to death, sacrificing herself in a fight against the Anti-Monitor to defeat him the first time. It's wild that she's the hero that kind of goes down first in this blaze of glory. It's just, it hits me, it just hits you. You're like, they are willing to go there. And it's not like the first time you see it with Solovar, you're like, oh man, this is really a big thing. And like, oh, cool, heroes will die. You watch Supergirl fight for her life and on the edge that she knows she's going to die for the fact to save all of reality. And it just hits you. The fact that Barry Allen, a character that's been around at that point for 30 years, doesn't sacrifice himself, but in order to escape, to save himself, he takes out the Monitor's entire operation, leaving the Anti-Monitor stranded. It's cool to see the fact that he vibrates through time pretty much and it goes back to the beginning of the story. Like, that's cool that Easter egg is paid off 7 to 8 issues later. The fact that the villain is not just like, oh, I'm evil for the sake of being evil. No, it's the fact that this villain is this overcompassing idea of antimatter. He is a piece of reality trying to take what's his, what he believes is. I also think this is the first time we really see villains being evil for the sake of evil. Like, evil. The all-out war stuff, the back end of this event, with Lex and Brainiac's army of supervillains killing heroes and poisoning people and take like they are literally taking over Earth. It's crazy to see that they were like, yeah, we beat the monitor, but now all the bad guys are coming after us. And the heroes are like, we are still fighting this constantly. It's a nonstop ride. This book does not stop from start to finish. There is no kind of like quiet moment. It goes from start, we're building up, and then it's a roller coaster. It's a straight shoot. It is action, 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 with this major story. Like, heroes are fighting, heroes are dying, heroes are fighting, heroes are dying, and there's no. And they're losing, they're losing, they're losing, and all you want to do is hope the entire time as Superman rallies everyone behind him, going, we can do this, we're doing this. The monitor dies. Well, okay, cool, I guess we're going to still do this, because Alexander goes, no, we're doing this. My father was a hero, we're going to save the world. It's cool to see, like, these guys don't stop because the world's going to end. There is the idea, like, this is the pinnacle of the light and the darkness, the pinnacle of superhero storytelling. That Marv Wolfman and George Perez put together, it's fantastic. The moments that you realize, like, hey, these are characters I grew up with, if you were growing up with these characters at the time, going, oh, well, I may never see them again, and this is the final stuff. I remember talking to people when I was younger about Crisis on Infinite Earths and their experiences reading it while they were growing up, and the fact that the final page of issue, like, 3, it's a white page. The fact that the world goes white and the heroes have lost. Like, they lost. Like, it ends with them losing. The worlds are all dying. And then there were no other books coming out. What happens? What do you do as a little kid? What do you do as a fan going, I watched all my childhood heroes die. And then the next issue comes out and you find out they're all alive. The world's a mess and they barely make it out and they're running by the skin of their teeth and how they kind of have to kind of limp through this war. I don't think anything will ever capture what Crisis on Infinite Earths means to me as a comic book fan. As a DC fan, as a writer, I am always kind of, I'm a big brain thinker and idealist, creator, when it comes to concepts. I'm a big brain concept person. It's kind of like a fault that people kind of give me about writing comics or coming up with ideas because everyone's like, oh, you can just simplify it. I'm like, oh, well, but I don't want to. Like, you don't have to make things, very, very simple and basic. You can think and make it a little bit more creative and conceptually bigger. But that being said, it's what I strive for. Aggressive versus a story I would love to tell myself, but you can't replicate this. This has been done once, and it's only been done once. You can see copycats and clearly, I will be talking about this as the event, this podcast goes on, but really, it's because of Crisis on Infinite Earths that everything else goes on. Yes, was it needed? I've talked to customers that, were alive at this point, and they don't, some of them don't particularly like it, some of the ramifications of the book. But that being said, you can't take away how great this is a story, as a comic book. As something that was never done before in the industry, it's insane that this has gone down the way it has. I love it. It's fantastic. I recommend this. This is the book for any DC collector. Whether you're just getting it as a trade, whether you're getting the big mega box set for somebody, this is the must read book. It's the must read book for any DC collector. Any comic book person needs to read this book. It doesn't matter if you're a fan of DC or not. You need to read this. It's kind of what sets up the board. It's the end game before end game. It's the Infinity War before Infinity War. It's the Turtles Forever before Turtles Forever. It's every mega crossover. It's the Spider-Verse before the Spider-Verse. It's the Secret Wars before Secret Wars. It's the crossover. It's the mega event. It's the comic. It's amazing. Every show will be wrapped up on a scale. Every rating will wrap up on a scale of 1 to 5. 5 being the best, 1 being the worst. And clearly, as you listen to my rant and rave, it's a 5 out of 5. I can't praise this book enough for what it is, what it means to me, what it means to comic books as a whole. It's fantastic. So, with that being said, guys, thanks for listening. You pick up these books at your local comic shop or online. You follow us and read along using the hashtag DC Crisis Adventures. Follow us on social media on Instagram at Android's Amazing Podcast and on X at Android's Amazing. And next time, I will see you while we cover Zero Hour. Guys, I'll see you next time in the bleed. Have a good one.